We think one of the most important things a seed stage entrepreneur needs to do is design experiments and learn about their business. And the very best entrepreneurs are fabulous learners. Learning is not a straightforward thing necessarily, because it's not just learning about anything, but it's actually a very focused approach to learning about how to build a scalable business model. So maybe we step back a second and think, well, you know, what's the job of a seed stage entrepreneur? I would argue it's to find a scalable business model. So a business model is how you make money. Scalable means this can be large. So this can generate venture style returns. The job of a seed stage entrepreneur is not to generate revenue. By the way, you can generate revenue that pulls you away from a scalable business model, like doing services as opposed to product sales. It's not to land customers. Again, because you could land lots of customers by giving them money. Please be a customer of mine, I will give you $100,000. Which, by the way, a lot of startups do in order to essentially buy customers by giving away their product below their cost. That's not what we're looking for entrepreneurs to do. We're looking for them to build a scalable business model. So now the question is, how do you figure out what a scalable business model is? And it starts with some of the things I mentioned before, which is a customer insight and a big market opportunity and so forth. But now the question is, well, how do you connect the dots? How do you go from these initial insights, so at the point in time when we're investing in a company, all the way to a Series A where people are writing you the big checks? And that's the learning process. That's the learning about building a scalable business model. How does an entrepreneur find a scalable business model? Well, it starts, they got to be pointed in the right direction. They got to be pointed at a big market with a customer insight. So they got to be pointed in a direction where learning can happen. So, I mean, and by the way, all the companies we invest in, we think are pointed in an interesting direction. So that's true for all of the startups we invest in. But now the question is, how do you execute against that? How do you actually go learn? And we would argue that the first thing to think about is, what's the most important thing to learn about? It's the biggest risks in your business. So the goal between the seed and the Series A is, how do I de-risk the business? How do I take a risk out? You want to learn about the biggest risks first. So how do we go about that? We have three criteria for going about designing an experiment and learning effectively. You focus on relevant, material, and economic experiments. So relevant means you're focused on the things that matter most. You're focused on the big risks. Let me give you an example. Suppose you're going after what turns out to be a small market. You can't fix a small market with a better team or product or this. Small means small. So if that's a potential risk, that's something really important to learn up front. Second is material. Material means, can you do anything differently because of what you've learned? So for example, if you learn you're going after a small market, one of the things you can do differently is pivot to a different market. So that's material, in that you can do something different. On the other hand, let's say for some reason that you're committed to a market. You've got a partner or you've got some other reason why you're going after this market regardless of how big it is. Well, we'd argue there's no value in figuring out the size of the market because you're not going to do anything differently having figured that out. Criteria number three, economic. Does the value of what you learn, and the value comes from your ability to change your decision, is that more than what it costs you to run the experiment? So we think of this as the value of information. So you're going to spend a bunch of time and your money to go learn something. Is the value of that learning more than the cost? Now, this is a little bit of a tricky thing to think through. So one easier way to do that is you start out with, what's the simplest way to think about economics of information? It's called perfect information. So imagine you had a clairvoyant. And the clairvoyant could tell you with 100% certainty, what's the size of the market? You ask the clairvoyant, how big is the market? And the clairvoyant says it's 1.53 billion. Okay, that would be perfect information. And now the question is, what's that worth to you? Now, once you've kind of got a sense of that, now the question is like, okay, whatever experiment you're gonna run is imperfect information. You're not really gonna know the size of the market. You're gonna know it within some band of uncertainty. And so the value of imperfect information is always less than the value of perfect information. Now, where this is useful, imagine you've got an experiment. Consultant comes to you and says, I will do a market sizing study for you for $100,000. And you, on the back of the envelope, do the value of perfect information. You find out, well, that's worth $50,000 to me to do perfect information. So why in the world would I pay $100,000 for somebody to come up with imperfect information? And by the way, I would argue in big companies, probably 80% of the investments made in market studies and other sorts of studies, the value of that is not more than the cost. Now, the startup world, people tend to do a little bit better just because they're so cash constrained. But I would argue this is also a big problem in the startup world, which is people are spending a lot of money and a lot of energy learning things that at the end of the day just don't have enough value to make that activity worthwhile. So let me give you a few examples of companies we've invested in that I think have done a great job learning and run great experiments. So one is HomeLight. So HomeLight's one of the Ulu investments, and they help you, if you're selling your home, find a real estate agent that will help you sell that home. And it turns out most of the tools that are out there help you buy homes. There's very few tools as of a few years ago when we invested in HomeLight that helps you sell them. Now, Drew, you're the CEO, was like, I think this is a good idea, but before I build a lot of product, I want to test to see if people are really willing to partner with me to find a real estate agent. So he put up a web form, and it was literally just a form where people would fill it out, and they'd say, you know, here's my home, I'm looking for a real estate agent, I live in Palo Alto, this sort of thing. And then Drew would get this information manually. He would go find the real estate agent that would make the most sense and connect them up a couple days later. So from the customer's point of view, it looks like, oh, it's all automated, it's all online. But really, really, it was all done manually. Now, the great thing about this is Drew was able to put this thing up in, you know, like a day. And then he was able to get real customers signing up. He was able to deliver real value to them, helping them find up with a real estate agent and really get paid. Because it turns out, like when you refer in the real estate business, if you refer a customer to another real estate agent, and you're also a real estate agent, which Drew was, you get a referral fee. And so he was able to demonstrate all the key parts of building a scalable business model with about a day's worth of effort on the product side. This is just one of many experiments that Drew was able to run. And now he's got it to the point where, I mean, HomeLight is a significant organization. I mean, they have billions of transactions that happen a year. They have 28,000 real estate agents that are part of their partner program, and they're off to the races. I mean, you know, knock on wood, HomeLight's going to be a public company at some point in time. So I think Drew was very clever about how he went about learning. So, I mean, he's a natural learner, but in particular, he was very focused in his learning on what are the key risks in my business and how do I take those off the table so that, and that's how you create value. You take the risks off the table in your business. And as you do that, now you become more attractive to the Series A investors and to employees. And I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, you're making profitable business. So what would I recommend to our entrepreneurs once we've invested? How do you figure out which experiments to run? And a couple of things. Oftentimes you want to be a fast learner. So like the fastest experiments you can run are often good experiments. And the reason is because you can iterate. So you try an experiment, it doesn't work, you don't learn anything, that's fine, you're doing it fast, so you just run the next one. As opposed to a market study that takes you months, and now if you don't learn anything, you're months behind. So fast is a criteria, cheap is a criteria. So you, I mean, your limited budget, you want to learn fast and cheap. Every once in a while, you need to run a slow, expensive experiment. Think big pharma and clinical trials. And there's just no way to get around it because you've got things like the FDA and you've got very difficult things to go prove. Fortunately, most of our companies are not in that realm where they have to run big, expensive experiments. It's like lots of little, small, cheap experiments is usually the way to go. Learning can't be outsourced. Like you as the entrepreneurs are the ones that need to figure this out. And oftentimes that means you're the one that needs to talk to customers. You're the one that needs to have your hands on the experiments because, you know, that's where you get the most learning. So hiring a marketing consultant to go talk to a bunch of your customers every once in a while works, but for the most part is not a path to success.